when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Internet Marketing. To you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.co.uk. This is Internet Marketing. Now, before we start today, we'd like to encourage anyone looking for help with their digital marketing to get in touch with Site Visibility. Whether you have a burning digital marketing question or you're looking for an agency to work with, they'd love to hear from you. Give them a call, +44 1273 733 433, or you can fill out the form at sitevisibility.co.uk/contact, or alternatively, you can talk to either Scott or Sean via the live chat function on the site. They'd be happy to help. Now today, I'm joined by Jeff White, co-founder of Cooler Partners. He's no relation, by the way. Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Andy. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for coming on. And you're based up in Canada, in Nova Scotia. Have I said that correctly?
Almost. Nova Scotia.
Nova Scotia. I knew I'd said it completely wrong. Completely wrong. And it does actually mean New Scotland, doesn't it?
That's right. Yeah, it does. We're tucked over here on the right side of Canada's east coast, and originally settled by Scottish folks, and we have a Gaelic college, and there's half the time I can hear bagpipes from my office for the tourists.
Really?
So we haven't managed to get rid of that.
Bagpipes.
Yep.
I've never actually tried to play the bagpipes, but I'm sure that it would be quite a noise if I did. Yeah, so Nova Scotia, I remember flying over Nova Scotia on the way down to New York. It's on the sort of New York flight path, isn't it, from the UK?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So tell us about yourself, Jeff. Tell us about yourself, and also tell us about Cooler Partners.
Sure. So as you mentioned, we're based in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and our agency is vertically focused. We work with mid-market manufacturers in North America who sell in a B2B type context. And I am a web designer and developer by training, and I lead that practice here at Cooler, although I now have some fantastic staff who are much better at that than I am. So I get to work with them every day to turn out sites and work on usability and UX and things like that for some really interesting companies.
Now, usability and UX, a huge subject. We did touch on this a couple of episodes ago, and I'm glad we're talking about it again. I want to talk about, I was going to say international websites, and I suddenly realized that all websites are international. Well, in terms of their availability, but I was just wondering, obviously not all the sites on the web are available throughout the world. We'll come on to that later. But what are some of the big problems that organizations run into when they're sort of building and maintaining sort of big corporate sites that serve buyers in different countries?
Well, I think one of the most important things is, you know, that kind of defines an international site is that when you're talking about organizations that sell truly internationally, it generally means that they have sites that are available in multiple languages. They might be accessible via different domain names. You know, if they're in Italy, .it, and you know, the co.uk if they're in the UK. And they present certain challenges that just aren't necessarily there for companies that sell more regionally or only within the US or Canada or the UK. Often they are large beasts that are complicated through mergers and acquisitions. So sites that are bolted on to other other corporate environments, and you know, they may adapt some of the UX and some of the design, but not all of it. They may have duplicate content issues where, especially if they operate in multiple English countries, we see this a fair amount, where they'll have the same content on the .com, on the .ca, the .uk, and you know, the .au for Australia, and none of those, so they're all kind of competing for the same search traffic with the same content, but as far as Google's concerned, they're different sites.
Yeah.
So that can be a bit of a concern. The inconsistent UX or inconsistently applied interface design. So they might have similar color schemes, similar logos, but the navigation is different. Or you know, some of them are responsive and some of them aren't. And then I think, you know, the two of the really big ones are, you know, they may only offer e-commerce in certain jurisdictions, but that's not immediately apparent when you get there. So, you know, you may try and buy something and then only get to the checkout and find out, oh, we only ship to the US. Mm. You know, or the one of the biggest problems that we see is that they really don't necessarily enforce translation and have multilingual problems, in that only some of the content is translated into French or Italian or German or Japanese or Chinese or what have you.
Mm. You mentioned all these different sort of, one of the things you mentioned was actually duplication. And I was just wondering that, what is the solution to that? Because I'm guessing that with a really big corporation, you've probably got different teams working on different languages or different sort of country versions of the website. Is that normally the case? Is that normally what you find?
I think it's that. So you'll have, maybe the marketing department is led out of the US, but then there will be people who are working on the marketing team in Australia and in the UK, and they're kind of taking, oh, well, you know, this bit's good, and they'll put that on the homepage, and not realizing that they're kind of creating problems with that. And what we often recommend especially when we're doing mergers of, you know, taking these large disparate sites and kind of trying to turn them into a single corporate entity, is we'll work with them to try and bring all of those things together and get rid of those subdomains and instead use language filtering so that people can switch languages, but only have one core English site, one core French side, you know, and simply use the language for selecting that rather than having a different domain name and therefore a different site for each one.
So you mentioned language there. I mean, if we look at that perhaps a bit more, open it up a bit, just look at content in general, what are the sort of common issues that crop up around sort of content and language?
Well, I think, as I mentioned, you know, one of the biggest things is not really taking into consideration the fact that, you know, you may have, you're going to have buyers in these different countries who are expecting the site to be available as it is in English, in French, or in German, or something like that. And as a result, I think what oftentimes happens, because, you know, content is expensive. Content's expensive to create. It's expensive to maintain. It's expensive to translate. Mm. And not only that, but, you know, you shouldn't just be doing direct translation of content anyway. You know, you just kind of converting the English directly into French isn't necessarily taking into consideration what the personas in that country are expecting. You know, and talking to them in their own language isn't as simple as simply replicating the English. It's about kind of changing to the language and the nuances of speech in that country or in that jurisdiction. Yeah. And, you know, we see that in Canada, where we have, you know, the province of Quebec is French, but that French is very different from the French that you would see in Paris.
Yes.
For example. Yeah. So, you know, trying to adapt to the personas that are going to be reading that and ensuring that they're not feeling slighted in any way for the way that the content is written, and using colloquialisms that are local to them. I think that's pretty important. And, you know, I think this kind of comes into play as well, as I mentioned, around multiple domains, you know, so instead of having a separate domain for each language and kind of targeting that country, instead you should be using a language switcher with a single site, either on a .com as kind of the basis, and redirecting all of those domains to the appropriate area. And this also comes into play too when you're choosing the content management platform that you want to use for the site. A lot of the big enterprise clients that we work with, you know, they might have large enterprise content management platforms that make the creation and management of multiple languages particularly cumbersome. And it's interesting to see, you know, tools like WordPress that really do a great job of making the management of multilingual sites a fair bit easier than some of the large expensive corporate platforms.
You mentioned there earlier, actually, about sort of merging multiple sites or sort of migrating them together, whichever word you prefer. What sort of things need to be considered when you're tackling a large sort of multinational site and when you're trying to do this sort of merging together operation?
Well, I think one of the first things that we certainly do, you know, we're a very UX focused organization and very content focused. So one of the very first things that we do is a content audit. So we want to see, you know, what's available on all of these different platforms, what sites and pages are getting search traffic currently, so that we can maintain any of that Google rank that they may have. We want to ensure that, you know, as we're kind of building out the new amalgamated version of the site, that we're putting in appropriate redirects for all of that different content that we may have, so that we know, you know, if someone is used to going to something on whatever domain, that page is now, you know, living in an appropriate place and can be found by both the search engine and the people using the site. The other thing too about, you know, big international platforms is that you often have especially our clients tend to be on the manufacturing side, and they have large dealer and distribution networks. So having a system in place that's available for people to be able to find their local representative, their local distributor, their local dealer, so that they know where they can buy those things, either through geolocation, postal code lookup, whatever that happens to be, is a super important tool, especially as you're amalgamating large sites.
That course gets us into the whole area of local search, which we won't get into, don't worry. One thing I did want to ask, though, is that, you know, availability of websites in some countries is very different. I mean, and China comes to mind, completely different set of rules in China. What needs to be considered for companies operating there?
Well, China is really interesting because, of course, all sites that are hosted outside of China are, I don't think they actually call it this, but we call it the Great Firewall.
Yes.
But so all sites that are hosted outside of China can be really slow for people within China. So if you're going to actually be doing business in China, you owe it to your customers to locate and purchase a server that is inside of China's firewall.
Yeah.
And that way it will be as fast as it is for, you know, users outside of China. And that presents certain problems, especially if you're trying to amalgamate a site, you know, that China's the one place where you're going to have to continue to maintain under a separate domain name just for that country. There's also considerations. You can't have e-commerce unless your site is hosted in China. So if you're going to be trying to sell things online, you absolutely must have a site that is located in China, and you need to have what they call an ICP number. Now, it's killing me, but I can't remember exactly what ICP stands for at the moment. But you have to have that number in order to have government approval to be able to sell items online within that country. So, you know, there's a number of different considerations. Of course, there's also, you know, a matter of ensuring that you have all of your translation done and all of your content available in Chinese and simplified Chinese. And that presents certain, you know, considerations for organizations, especially from a cost perspective. So anytime that you're going to be doing translation, whether it's just from English to French or English to Chinese, you know, you're going to have additional costs over the creation of that content. And, you know, so having a site that is focused there, located there, and preferably having some people on the ground who are able to maintain that site in that language are going to be essential to ensuring that you're servicing, you know, your customers in China properly.
How difficult is it to get a site hosted in China?
It's not as hard as you would think, but it is difficult to do from outside.
Right.
So that's why it's critical to have some boots on the ground within China that you can actually rely on to locate and sign a contract, get a server up and running. And then it also is difficult to maintain remotely. So, you know, you may need to be able to send files to someone in China and have them upload them to the site rather than doing everything from, you know, North America or what have you.
Jeff, if you had one key takeaway for our audience today, you know, in relation to this, what would it be?
I think the main thing and one of the most important things is ensuring that, you know, you're looking at the content that you have and organizing it from an architectural perspective to make it as action-oriented for the buyer personas across the, you know, around the world as possible, so that you're actually making that content easy to understand, easy to find, that it's within the buyer's journeys that you're going to have within those different countries, and ensuring that that content is relevant and still search friendly, and then ensuring that you're getting serious about providing proper content in each language in each country and having that accessible easily from within the site using a language switcher, I think is an absolutely essential component to being successful with a large international site.
Well, Jeff, thanks so much for coming on. How can our listeners find out more about you and more about Kula Partners?
Sure. So we're at kulapartners.com. That's K-U-L-A partners.com. We also host a podcast of our own for manufacturing marketers called The Kula Ring that you can find on our site. And in addition to that, we do integration work with an application that we've built called SynchroStack, and that's synchrostack.com. So if anybody wants to check that out, that would be great.
Well, thanks, Jeff, and thanks everyone for listening. The show notes will be in the usual place, sitevisibility.co.uk/impodcast. If you're enjoying the show, leave us a review, because we like reviews, especially if they're nice ones. Questions and suggestions for future topics. The email is podcast@sitevisibility.co.uk. You can tweet at sitevisibility. We have a site visibility group on LinkedIn. So that's all from me, Andy. And it's all from Jeff.
Thanks very much for having me, Andy.
And thanks for coming on, Jeff. And we'll see you next time on Internet Marketing.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right, because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.